the official Lookout Landing podcast, on which we ostensibly talk about the trappings and trials of the Seattle Mariners, but today we're just going to kind of talk about whatever we want. My name is Nathan Bishop. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. I am back with the original crew. I have Scott Weber from his long sojourn to various locales. Scott, nice to have you back.
Thanks, and welcome to the Lookout Landing 2.0 podcast. I'm managing editor Scott Weber. It's June 29th, 2014, and the Mariners are 44-38. Things are going pretty swell. What do you guys think?
Oh, shit.
Yikes.
What are our... In 2014, David doesn't exist, so I'm pretty sure we just tore a hole through the space-time.
That's true. He's I think, in pre-K. I think that's the...
So yeah, somewhere Doc Brown is running around just freaking out because we've just completely fucked up time now.
Only 7.5 games back.
Is that all it was? Behind that's the all it A's?
Was. I don't know. That's too much research.
No, the A's.
Wait, were we really 44-38 right now?
Yeah.
In 2014. Yeah. In fact, they got all the way up to 48-39 on July 5th.
Dang.
Yeah.
Hey, David.
That was a good year for a while.
David Skiba.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm drinking wine, feeling fine. You know. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here.
What kind of wine are you drinking, Dave?
Well, so I actually poured a wine tasting this weekend for a lovely group of ladies who are in a group with my mom. And they wanted some Riesling, so I got a couple cool local Rieslings, but of course they didn't finish bottles, so I'm kind of killing them off.
Yeah.
I'm currently drinking the Armstrong Family Winery Riesling, which is a fully dry. You can find them in Woodinville, Washington, too.
I love that Riesling. I actually bought a bottle the last time I went to Armstrong.
It's a cool one.
That's a great winery, too.
I also really recommend going to Armstrong because they are in the same little strip molly thing as Dirty Bucket and Locust Cider, so you can kind of make an afternoon of going there.
I feel like this podcast feels 70% less cool when you guys talk about wine instead of beer.
Oh, sorry. Hey, this past weekend I ran into Dave in Woodinville and introduced him to my parents, and then I had to leave. And so Dave and my parents hung out for a while, and my parents said of Dave, he has a lot of opinions.
I think it's because
it's mostly because Dave kind of pish-poshed on some of their favorite winners.
And so when they said he has a lot of opinions, they meant they hated him.
Hello, wow. It me. Here's how
He's
I feel about
a lot of opinions.
Speaking of opinions, how are we feeling about baseball? The Mariners are 39-38. June has been shit. They are 9-17 in the month. However, they have triumphed in 3 of their last 4 contests and have been shaking the roster up like crazy. Did you guys see the moves that went down today? Nick Vincent to the DL. Nate Karns went to the bullpen yesterday. Wade Miley's back today. Taijuan Walker's back tomorrow. You guys see all this stuff?
I did. And did you see what Nick Vincent said about heartbreaking?
Yeah, trying to pitch through injury. If you guys could do that in a major third harmony next time, that'd be really helpful.
Wow, heartbreaking.
How about blasting forth in 3-part harmony?
So
that's a real small subset. I'm getting too obscure. There's a healthy balance. I'll try and figure it out.
You don't know where the line is until you cross it, Scott.
That is true. So if anybody gets that, shout out in the comments below.
Nick Vincent went on the DL today, basically said, like, I don't know about you guys. My first response when I heard he went on the DL was like the same thing when I heard Wade Miley went on the DL, which was like, well, yeah, he sucks. So, of course, they put him on the DL.
Because
I'm a jerk. But Nick Vincent has given up in 14 innings in June. He's given up 4 home runs, all of which seem like they have single-handedly lost the Mariners the game. And then he came out and basically commented, and it just sounds like he got an MRI, and he actually has been pitching through some sort of like mid-30s back thing that he's got going on.
It's Nathan Bishop post-LL softball
back injury.
Yeah, it's just dad back. It's something that happens when you get to a certain age. But that tightened up on him. I kind of feel okay about it, though. I don't know about you guys. Like, I'm feeling much, much better about the bullpen right now than yes. I was the majority of June. Do you guys feel that way?
For me, moving Nate Karns back into it, I mean, obviously makes the bullpen better.
Yeah, that's very interesting because obviously I feel like Nate Karns has the profile to just be an absolute beast in the bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
But what's from a strategic standpoint, that's interesting. I know David, you had kind of said on Twitter that perhaps this could be a move to watch his innings mm-hmm. a little bit and then yeah. you move him back in. That's I think that's a little bit tricky, but with the All-Star break coming up, you could probably give him a sim start over the break or something like that and stretch him back out. Is that what you kind of see happening?
That's what I was getting at, I guess, especially when you look at, Karns, who granted his inning count isn't super high because it feels like he lasts 5 1/3 every start.
Yeah. Well, I've said for years that you should focus on pitches and not
exactly
innings.
Exactly.
Dumb.
But he's still throwing a lot of pitches. But, in his career, I think he's only lasted, I think his best season was 147 innings or something like that. So for me, it makes a little bit of sense to be like, hey, you know, maybe Service and DePoto or, you know, Stoudemire, they're looking at this like, you know, what if we gave Karns kind of like 2 full weeks off before the break and then, you know, we rested him theoretically for a playoff push? Because he does look fatigued, personally.
And, you know, in some ways, the move, which I was kind of nonplussed when I first saw it, just because I like Nate Karns, and I remember the yes. guy from April and May. That, I mean, he has the stuff to be a really effective
pitcher. He was our best starter. Pitcher for probably 6 weeks.
Yeah, for a stretch there, he was. He's only gone more than 5 innings one time since May 19th. I think that's one in his last 6 or 7 starts. And I warmed up to the move. Because I feel like what it does is it helps the bullpen issue in 2 ways. Because the way that the Mariners have been losing predominantly in June, if there's one way, although they've managed to find many, but if there's one theme, it's felt like the middle relief has been where games have been lost because the starters haven't been going deep, and then the 6th and 7th have been coming out, and then guys like Steve Johnson are getting too many pitches, or Nick Vincent trying to pitch through injuries, giving up big home runs. And by moving Nate Karns to the bullpen, you take out a starter who's making us use our worst relievers too much because he's only going 5 innings, and you add more depth to that bullpen in case a starter does go only 5 innings. So it yeah. kind of feels yeah. like we're yeah. trying to solve this problem. Of course, that does mean that we have Wade LeBlanc in our rotation for the foreseeable
I love
future.
This. I love
hey,
getting,
I'm all yeah. Why not?
I love
every year
Wade
you got someone like this.
I love letting a dude in his 30s just be like, hey, man, we know you have about 4 months of demon magic left. Use it. Use all your spells.
Yeah, and he did.
You'll have no mana left after this.
So in
tap out.
In the flow. In the
no elixir.
In the power rankings, the magic power rankings, we're putting demon magic above Cardinals devil magic because the demon magic slayed the devil magic on Friday.
But it's also below Rangers, whatever.
Yeah. Somewhere in between Rangers and The Gathering.
Yeah. I think I feel good about LeBlanc as, because what the Mariners need are, they need starters that are inning sponges. More
yes,
than anything.
They need 6 innings.
The offense is still good enough to win the majority of games they play if you get a starter that's going to go 6-ish innings. And you know, I feel good about this offense's chances to score 4 or 5 runs more nights than not. But what you need are guys yeah. that can bridge that gap between the 5th and 6th inning to get to Edwin Diaz and now Nate Karns and Mike Montgomery and then Cishek on the back end. Because I don't know about you guys, I'm getting pretty close to being done with Joaquin Benoit. I've about had it was a good I didn't
that's,
have
that's a weird one up. Too because I really love that move.
Yeah. Me too. And the stuff is still not terrible, but his command is just shit.
That's what it is. It feels like he walks the first batter of every inning.
And even when he's not walking, I think 2 appearances ago, he went 3-0 on 2 of the first 3 guys that he faced. I don't think he ended up walking either of them, but he's constantly putting himself in the spot where, let me make this way more difficult than it has to be. And it's just excruciating. You saw it on Friday. Which the game with the Adam Lind walk-off home run. He comes in a 1-0 game, walks the first guy. I think he then gave up a hit. Then he walks two more. One of them intentionally hits a guy. He hits a guy on 0-2. That's what he it was.
That kills him.
Yeah, that's...
And it's just I mean, they're going to need to be. Are we all on the same page that we would like to see Edwin Diaz start to be not necessarily the quote eighth inning guy, but the high leverage guy to get to Steve Cishek?
Dude, last night. Yeah, he was flames.
Well, that's I think that's the right way to break in a guy like that. You know, baseball conventions are so stupid that when you anoint someone like the eighth, the setup guy or like the closer, there's a whole bunch of extra expectations that come with that. When in reality, your best guy should be kind of the rotating guy that comes in and puts out fires all the time. That's that's really how you should use your best reliever. Like that's
it's not necessarily in the ninth inning.
So because that there's not the expectation, you're not putting a thing on him. You're just happy to say, all right, now you're coming in the sixth inning when there's a couple guys on, or, you know, protect this lead for one inning. It seems like the right thing to do. I don't know. Have you guys been sensing that things are moving in that direction for high leverage-ivity for him?
It feels like last night was a bit of a tip of the cap.
I think more often than not, that's their plan for him. And Scott, I think that you're right, that they're trying to not just throw him into that whole hog, like right away. They're trying to not overwhelm him and kind of let him feel his way through it a little bit just because he is so new to MLB and still only 22 years old. But I have to give the team credit. I do think that they've been pretty reactive, quick to react in adjusting roles. Like they're not doing things like, well, Benoit's our eighth inning guy, and then just going out there and just letting him get hammered. They're not letting guys like Nate Karns just continue to flounder in the rotation. You know, when they see a trend that they think needs to be fixed, they're going out and doing it. And that makes me think that they're going to find the right spot for Diaz, which I think is that like what you're talking about. And I totally agree. He doesn't need to be the eighth inning guy or the setup guy. He needs to be the help. This is on fire. We need a fire hose to extinguish this quickly. And then he comes in and throws 101 miles an hour, which works nicely in that regard.
You know, the team's just in a fascinating place right now. I think they got did get absolutely ravaged by injury for an entire month. They've managed to stay afloat. I think we'd all agree they've probably lost the division, barring an absolute collapse by the Rangers. And that's honestly not much of the Mariners' fault. Granted, they did lose, I think, 5 games in the standings to the Rangers. But even so, the Rangers are in a vein of form that teams catch once every decade.
They're 21-6 now in June.
And if the Mariners had gone 500 for June, they'd still be, what, six
under?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's still a long shot to win the division as 6 games back going into July.
And the good news is the Mariners are currently 4 games under the Pythagorean.
You just said that with a southern drawl, and I loved it.
I did.
The Pythagorean, my dear, if you'll take a
That's where I learned my maths, was down in the south.
With a monocle and a top and a cane.
I couldn't see the numbers.
You were Mr. Peanut, weren't you?
Literally dead life. Middle of the MLB in FIP, and still the offense is absolutely mashing by WRC+. They're the 4th best offense in the MLB, so they're underperforming and still in the race. And Nathan, you totally hit it on the head. Where what I'm loving is how reactive DePoto has been to the issues. Seeing Nori Aoki go down, and granted they haven't made another major league move to replace the left fielder. But seeing him lose at bats, and just because of the way the playing works, Goody's getting more at bats currently. I love that. I love that they're willing to just constantly mix and match this bullpen. I think right now, and it's still not healthy. We still haven't seen Zick. We probably won't see White or, oh my gosh, who's the guy from the A's we picked up who
Scribner.
Scribner. Yeah, we probably won't see them.
Yeah, but Furbush, we've got good news on like Furbush yesterday. Back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the bullpen's getting healthier, the rotation's getting healthier, and as long as they can ride out the next 12 games to the All-Star break and stay afloat, stay 500 or better, I really, really like their odds because they're currently underperforming.
Can I ask a question real quick about Nori Aoki?
Yeah.
How the fuck do option years work?
Oh, God.
Real talk, how do they work?
This is not going to be a two-hour show, Scott.
This guy is 34 years old. Signed as an international free agent, has 5 seasons of MLB experience.
And he could be sent to AAA.
And they're just like, you need to go to AAA. And he says, okay, well, that's
well,
fair.
Like, okay,
I I am exaggerating because I feel like I actually have a pretty good grip on it. And I can look at this and say, okay, here's a case. Yes, he came in. He was older when he came in. Age doesn't necessarily matter. I get all that. But also, what?
I don't know.
You know,
it just doesn't seem right to me.
I don't get how it works, but I do really like what David was saying, too, about Aoki. Even before they sent him down, you know, they had already adjusted his role. Like, yep. they came into the season wanting him to be their everyday leadoff hitter, and he completely yep. fell on his face. And, I mean, even in 2014, we were talking about that earlier. How long did we have to deal with Austin Jackson just hitting like garbage in the leadoff spot day yeah. after day after day? Because yeah. Lloyd had decided he was the leadoff guy, and that's just where he was. And now we see he, you know, I think it was a couple weekends ago, he sat down against the left-handed starter, just didn't play so that they could put Sean O'Malley in left. And Sean O'Malley, who I love, should not be getting starts in left field for a team trying to contend for the playoffs. But that was the message right there.
Getting starts anywhere.
Right, exactly.
Ooh. No disrespect to Sean O'Malley. He seems like a great guy. And he's from Tri-Cities, right? So
He's from not Kennewick's. Pasco, is what we
He's from well, Richland, this a good
is...
one.
No, this has been a source of controversy on the blog.
Uh-oh. I do know someone from Pasco who went to high school with Sean O'Malley.
But both Pat, wait, but Kennewick and Richland claim him.
I got some opinions on both Kennewick and Pasco because of Jeremy Bonderman.
Yeah. The general consensus was
there's a story there that I probably shouldn't share. So I won't for now.
We'll have to do a later episode. Where
based we on can do it happened around the I'm managing editor 2014 era, of which we are still in the space time continuum that I could tell that. No, I couldn't tell that story then. Maybe now. Anyways, it's not a great story. Not a huge fan of that, but my uncle lives in Richland and we're full circle. It's a great place. Thumbs okay. up.
Cool. And if you have
Richland is wonderful. I almost took upon a house in my stead in Richland.
Oh, lovely.
I believe that's the phrase. You were dipping into like various different proper vernaculars.
I'm just sort of dabbling. I read the entirety of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner yesterday because I'm going to inscribe a part of it into the bar top. So I'm just kind of stuck in Byron.
A local brewery?
Yes, a local brewery.
How nice. That'll be fun.
It's fancy.
It is very fancy, just like you.
I bet. And you know, because I've kind of branded myself to be a little bit hashtag savage, people probably don't know that I can read. But I can read.
I have nowhere to go with that. I honestly didn't know. I'd never seen you read before, man. So it's news to me.
We assume that you can. It'd be difficult to write without it.
I've just been smashing keyboards for years
monkey.
Now.
You are the monkey. Okay, so where should we go to next with this baseball team? How do we?
I have one more question, and I don't mean to derail, but it's an interesting thing that I thought of, and this is just kind of how my brain works. If the plan is to move Nathan Karns back to the rotation, so I'm going to hop us back 10 minutes real quick. Do you think that we only see him used in mop-up duty? I think if we only see him used in long relief, that's the indication that he's coming back to the rotation.
I think he's coming back to the rotation.
Well, I mean, there's too many unknowns. I think he could be back in a week or two. I think he could be back as soon as after the All-Star break if Wade LeBlanc goes out and gets drilled the next three times that he starts games, or right. if Wade Miley is still garbage, or if – so if either Wade, you know, Wade's too much, or if Felix, for whatever reason, has a setback, or if James Paxton's fastball goes poof. Like, there's too many scenarios where it's obvious – like, I have no reason to believe that this rotation plus Felix is going to be what this team has for the rest of the year, because sure. we just learned this month that there's going to be attrition going on and injury through the rotation. So I don't know what to expect. I don't know if the plan is to bring him back like they have a set plan in their head, or if they're just kind of like, oh, we'll use him as we can. And then like as soon as we need a next man up, he's already there in the pen, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. I mean, that was the original when they traded for Nuno. That was the original way that they kind of operated him, is they were right. like, go swing or go in or out. Now his role has shifted and he's not that anymore.
I don't get what his role is. And I kind of feel like maybe he deserves a little bigger one.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
We have low key, we have a very amazing bullpen in terms of applicability to certain scenarios. Like Diaz,
Very flexible.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Nuno, they can all go three innings and have had to
on repeated occasions.
It's really remarkable.
Well, you've got Nuno, Montgomery, and now Carnes, who are all fresh off of being starters. So they're guys that are used to more than one position. I think Nuno should be getting the loogie look right now. I think
he's been
his
really
drop-down slider, it seems like guys are having a really tough time picking that up from the left side, and we don't really have anybody else in that role. They really like using Montgomery in the longer role for like 1 to 2 innings in the sixth and seventh. So until Furbush shows that he can be healthy, I don't see any reason why you don't use Nuno as your left-handed specialist, because he's been nails this year. Totally flown under the radar.
Totally, totally. I think he's our best reliever in my mind.
Whoa, wait. Vidal Nuno?
I think so.
Over Edwin Diaz?
I'd take him. I mean, in terms of like Vidal Nuno can do anything. He can give you 2 high leverage outs.
He can't throw 101 miles an hour.
He can, well, I mean, like in terms of applicability to scenarios, he's the most fungible of all the relievers. He can give you 2 high leverage outs, or he can or he can go 3 innings if someone gets cut short.
I would not agree with the statement that he's our best reliever, but I welcome you to have that opinion because this is a safe place.
I appreciate your welcoming.
It is safe.
I do think he's been wildly underrated this year and like we just said, completely underutilized. I think that there's definitely a bigger role for him in this bullpen and a more regular role in this bullpen, especially because the hope is that we're going to have way the hell fewer 4 and 3 1/3 inning starts from the starters going forward. So doing that I think that's part of the reason why the bullpen has felt so diverse, because we just had, what was it, last week in Detroit where Adrian Sampson went out to throw and then his elbow exploded while warming up, and they had to just
That's the worst.
I know, such a bummer. But then the bullpen has to throw, I think they ended up throwing 10, didn't they? Because that was one of the games that we figured out a way how to lose stupidly at the end.
Don't believe we won that game.
Which one? There's so very many.
Right. That's the entire month of June. But it's almost over. This is the penultimate day of June. The team is, like we talked about earlier, has won 3 of their last 4. How are we feeling about the team going forward? I wrote this morning, I feel like it kind of feels like they're starting to get their shit back together again. And I think even I kind of undersold how much the injuries really hurt them. Because
it was bad.
Yeah, the starting pitching depth just got ravaged. I mean, just destroyed.
How many times have we talked about removing the black holes from the lineup and how big of an impact that made? And then the second you lose Marte, boom, black hole.
And then Martin. And then you're running Aoki in center field.
Then you got double ones. It's basically like you've got Ackley and Zanino back in the lineup again.
Yep. It was brutal. And then you're not throwing. And even though, you know, we were all kind of underwhelmed with Felix coming into this year, but he was still good for 6 innings more days than not and giving his team a chance to win. And right now I would have taken that all of June because we were missing that so much. And I think the only real good thing that's come out of June has been the emergence of James Paxton, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which has been fun as shit.
Which is a very good thing.
Which has been fun as shit. I feel.
And Diaz.
And Diaz. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Paxton one feels more miraculous to me, just because Diaz is the 22-year-old with the 101-mile-an-hour fastball, and James is the sad panda that suddenly discovered.
You know? Panda.
Matt Ellis has a great story about being in Seattle and going out to brunch and seeing James Paxton eating brunch by himself in a restaurant in downtown Seattle, staring off into the distance.
When he gets done trying to drink all of the wine in Italy, Matt will have to come back and tell us that story on a podcast.
I agree.
I would love to hear that story.
Former guest, James Paxton. Good guy, actually.
I've heard. Ryan Divish said he's one of the low-key funniest guys on the team. Has a great sense
That's a verbatim Divish quote right there.
Mm-hmm. I believe that it is. I believe he said it on this very show to you and I, not to David. David couldn't make it that day.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. We did better without you.
So then let's talk about between now and the All-Star break. We have 12 games. We have 13 counting tonight.
That sounds right.
Nope. We have 12 counting tonight.
Okay.
So we have tonight. Then we have a four-gamer against the Orioles at home. Then we go on the road to Houston. And right? On the road to Houston? Yes. On the road to Houston. And then we're in Kansas City for four.
Right into the break.
How do we feel, given 12 games between now and the All-Star game, is a we are in this let's roll performance?
I don't know. I feel like the expectation's not that high. Like, if they went 6-6, I'd be like, okay. If they went 5-7, I'd be like, okay. It's not that big a difference to me. 5-7 and they're 500, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Then you still have, you know, the trade deadline to make a minor move and hope that things normalize and that the bullpen gets healthy and that everyone else continues to produce like they have and that you go back to what your Pythag would suggest. And then just that alone, and they're back in it. So, I mean, it would be fantastic to go 7-5, 8-4, and really get some momentum going into the break if that's a thing. But I'm not super concerned at this point. I mean, look, the ball's already dropped. We're in a familiar zone right now, so looking up is not bad.
It's a little different. We're
only because of the timing.
Yeah,
the route that they've taken.
It's only because
this place has
exactly
been very different. Yeah. But the location we find ourselves, it's like we went to work that we go to every single day, but like we took a helicopter instead of driving or something. It was just
The difference between this and 2014 is that at this stage in 2014, we were joking about it, but they were better, but they were never in first place.
They went through that losing streak
and they just weren't in it. They got hot in June.
Right.
And as opposed to, we tanked to June, so it just feels very different.
They never went through a stretch in 2014 that I remember. I'd have to go back and look. Like, the team went through the latter half of April and almost all of May, where not only were they winning games, but they were, like, soul-crushing, like, world-destroying. The win differential was out of this world. All facets of the team were clicking, and, like, they weren't needing luck, even though they were getting some. They were just out there bludgeoning people day after day.
Right.
I don't remember that in 2014, where it was just like, this is a demonstrably good baseball team playing very well for a long stretch right now.
Yeah, well, no, they had some stretches. July, and I remember they had one stretch in August. I think they won, like, I don't want to say 9 of 10, but it might have been 8 of 9, mm-hmm. where they kind of got back into it. But at that point, we were wild card chasing. It wasn't division. I think that's what's so different about this, is there was a holy shit, we're in first place thing for an extended period of time, and that hasn't happened before. Even when they've been good, it's always like you're chasing up to the actual playoffs.
And now here we are again.
Bullshit one game wild card.
Yeah.
I guess what I'll say is, you know, as of the recording right now, we're 2.5 games out of a wild card position, one game over 500, and 11.5 out of first place, like, unreal. But this point in 2015, we're 34-42 and 9 games out of first place. And that still felt, I mean, call it what you will, but it still felt like that team last year was good enough to, like, hey, if you guys figure it out, we could maybe make a run. But this team is, talent-wise, probably our best roster since 2003 and mm-hmm. in position to make a run.
I would agree with that. They're
better equipped, and you don't have to make – that's a thing, too, is that you don't have to make a big splash to really push for it. I think you can look for normalization, whereas – in 2014, when they're out there at the deadline, they're shopping for Austin Jackson. It's like, you got to make a move if you want to be in that wild card spot. This year, they do, but they don't. They definitely don't need to do anything big, and they shouldn't do anything big. When their upside is getting into a one-game playoff, they shouldn't do anything big. They should make an adjustment. I think we can all agree that corner outfield is probably the position that they're going to target. It's the easiest one for the biggest upgrade.
Yep. Yes.
But, you know, this is when you – I mean – It's a poor example now, but Marlon Byrd flew around forever as a guy that might be traded.
Sure.
You know,
that
doesn't cost much. He gets you an extra win and a half for the rest of the year. That's the guy they're probably looking at this deadline.
I would agree.
You think it's literally Marlon Byrd or a player like him?
if they actually find Marlon Byrd, here's the upside. He won't cost any money because he's suspended for a year. And he will still be better than Aoki.
By not playing.
He was bad.
Yes.
I don't think. I'm not sure Norichika Aoki makes it back.
I'm not sure either, honestly.
I don't know.
I think he you could do worse for a utility outfielder than him. I guess it all depends on how long they expect him to be down and work things up if he performs well down there. But also, that guy's got a track record, and I wonder if bringing him back up and not jamming him in the leadoff spot, he might actually become a bit of an asset again, because he doesn't have the skill set to just fall off the table like that.
Just don't.
It's been strange.
Neither did Sean Figgins.
Ooh. Very true.
I just don't.
Still a good signing.
I know.
In theory, that was still a good signing.
The process was still fine. I watched the guy play, and I just, even if he figures it out, what is the upside? He's not going to get better at defense. His arm's not going to get better. He's not going to start, like, stinging line drives everywhere. Your only hope is that he gets some more singles to fall down and that he can crank that OBP up to about 350 or so.
And stop striking out.
Yeah. Like, I just don't.
There's some asks.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few asks there.
Yeah.
The defense is never going to blow your mind.
No, and that's my thing. Like, even if you just get a guy like
Calhoun.
You're not going to get Cole Calhoun, you should say.
You're not going to go interdivision. It's not going to happen.
I want it so bad.
They should get, you know what they should do? They should get Andrelton Simmons and convert him to outfield.
Apparently everyone's doing it.
Yeah. Somewhere Jack Z just kind of sat up at attention.
I was going to say.
Rangy middle infielder.
Middle infielder.
Mm. You know what I can do with
Brendan Ryan does have a cannon.
Getting obscure again, Scott. All right. You guys.
That's not that obscure. Season 9 coming back.
Before,
that's obscure.
Before we break, I believe we do have another sponsor. We're going to come back and do a quick Twitter Q&A and wrap this one up, because the Mariners are going to start in 9 minutes and we'd like to watch most of that.
We would.
But who, I think we have a familiar brand that a lot of people already know. Candle Company has been kind of sponsors. We're very grateful for them. David, you want to take us to break with that?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much to Yankee Candle for sponsoring us this week. We absolutely love the product, and it always smells delicious. Caught in a summer fling but can't afford the price of getting away? Ready to spend a night with the one you love but don't know exactly how to get them in the right mood? Summer's the perfect time for love, home, and balance. But we could all use a little help. Hey folks, David Skiba here to tell you about how I learned to add a little more mystery to my summertime gladness with the new 2016 line of summer candles from Yankee Candle. With 4 new amazing scents, including Olive and Thyme, Summer Peach, Riviera Escape, and Sea Salt and Sage, I found a new way to smell amazing while feeling even better. A night where the only place I'd want to be is on the beach? I'll light up the Riviera Escape. The herbs in my garden while stuck in the office? Olive and Thyme. Simply want to enjoy the backyard while seeing the one I love? Well, folks, that's easy. Both the Sea Salt Sage and Summer Peach for the ultimate late night treat. How much do I love Yankee Candle? Let me count the ways. Wait on that, baby. Let me crash you for a moment. Baby, I don't. Sun don't shine in the shade. Bird can't fly in a cage. Even when somebody go away, the feelings don't really go away.
Welcome back. Thank you again so much to our sponsor, Yankee Candle. We're going to do some Twitter Q&A and get this knocked out real fast so we can let you guys enjoy the rest of this Mariner game. And by you guys, I mean us. Because we would like to enjoy this. You guys can listen to this whenever. You can ignore your boss at work. You can ignore your wife at home and listen to this at your leisure. However, we are stuck in this current plane of existence and time, which only moves forward. And in 1 minute forward, the Mariners will start. So not a lot of podcasts left. Scott, you have a piece of trivia that you are very excited to share with us. Is that
I correct? Am. I can't believe it. So I've been going through and obviously I was looking at 2014 for some parallels and clicked back on 2013.
Ooh, dark.
Dark year. In 2013, there were 25 position players who played for the Mariners over the course of the year.
Wow.
How many of those players do you think are current Mariners, and how many of them are still in the Mariners organization out of those 25?
Position players. 25. So how many? I'm sorry. What was the second part of the question? The first part is how many of them are...
It's two subsets. Okay. There's one who are current Mariners, and the other is who's still in the organization at all.
current
in the organization or in MLB? Sorry.
In the organization, in the Mariners organization.
Okay.
2013. So that is the year before Cano signed. That's
3 years ago.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Seager, absolutely.
Yep. Seager, yes. I would say, is it?
Did Goody get a play in 2013?
Yes, he did play in 2014 is the year he took off. So he
13, he played some, not many games.
So that's okay. Two.
Two.
That's two.
Is that
I think it that's it.
For the entire big league roster?
That's all.
Two out of 25?
Two out of 25.
And then in the organization, we have Mike Zunino still. Wasn't 2013 his first year?
Yep.
Chris Taylor just got traded.
Gone.
Luis Sardinas is new.
Not here.
Dustin Ackley is gone. Jesus Montero is gone. Justin Smoke is gone. Gone. They're having
the whole
album's
gone.
Say,
is that it?
In the speed of moving things in, that's it.
Holy shit.
Is that not mind-boggling?
I wonder how much different it is than even 2014. Like,
it's pretty significant. Now the pitching is not as bad. I mean, you have Felix Iwakuma, sure. Paxton. There's a lot
Walker,
of guys that
think
are
even it was in
gone, but you could still say Tom Wilhelmsen is there. Furbush is still there. Taiwan made his debut in 2013, mm-hmm. So there's more there.
But position, but I mean, I think we could all agree that the 2013 that those 25 names are not a bright collection of talent.
No, it's not
outside
like we asked
of Michael
them
Saunders.
To...
God damn it!
Let me run it down real quick because it is. Amazing to think that this was 3 years ago. 3 years ago. Mike Zunino, Justin Smoke, Nick Franklin, Brendan Ryan, Kyle Seager, Raul Ibanez, Michael Saunders, Mike Morse, Kendrys Morales, Dustin Ackley, Brad Miller, Andy Chavez, Jason Bay, Franklin Gutierrez, Kelly Shopik, Jesus Montero, Henry Blanco, Robert Andino, Abe Almonte, Humberto Quintero, Carlos Trienfel, Jesus Sucre, Alex Liddy, Carlos Peguero, and former podcast guest Brandon Bance.
Good God. That is so bleak.
That's amazing. Wow.
That's
so
ugly.
Bad.
If I've ever felt more disconnected from my time as managing editor of Lookout Landing.
That was
the fifth year of Jack's tenure. And that was unreal. The collection of position players that this team was.
I'm oddly in his camp. He got so weirdly screwed by the major league roster moves.
Some of
like remember Mike Morse before he hurt his hand.
Yeah, but you remember John Jaso how he still plays baseball and is fine.
But the thing about Mike Morse is that him hurting his hand is not like that's expected. I mean, he was extremely fragile.
I mean, I'm not saying that was like the best trade in the world.
We don't need to go blow for blow on Jason.
We don't.
Dude, we are not going Jason for Morse right now.
We're not going to do that. We're not. I remember Mike Morse ripping shit up in April of 2013 as well. And then Tanner Shepherds hit him in the hand because Tanner Shepherds sucks too. I wish that guy still played for the Rangers. God, it'd help a little bit. But yeah, that is truly incredible. And
that's really, really dark.
It really is. And like it's you know Jack tied his we all knew it at the time too he tied his career to Justin Smoke and Dustin Ackley and Jesus Montero and that was a ridiculous troika of position player prospects for a little while like that was like
well we've talked about I mean yeah we've talked about it forever and I mean ad nauseum here but Jack's downfall at the end of the day was player development not player acquisition in my opinion.
Guy knew talent. So, could not develop it.
And somehow the player acquisitions went horribly wrong.
I mean, he had some bad luck. The Franklin Gutierrez trade is
he had terrible luck.
Yeah.
And maybe that's an org down thing. Maybe player development starts, you know, all the way down from when you draft a guy and you bring him up and it's obviously there were problems in AA, AAA bringing guys up. I mean, Kyle Seager, the only homegrown talent to come out of that era basically and be successful.
Yeah.
I mean,
we have Ketel Marte who's kind of still
which is very Ajaxi.
Right? I guess you have James Paxton.
Mm-hmm. I thought we were talking position players. Sorry.
No. It is mostly a position player flaw. But yep. I mean, the guy kind of had some bad seeds.
Yep.
He didn't kind of had bad seats. He had terrible, terrible.
Hey, he got a Seth Smith. That's all I needed.
Hey,
you mean the guy with the lowest WRC plus in the month of June on the team? Way to go, Dad. Dad's drinking again.
It's not his fault.
Even then, his line is not too dissimilar from his line last year.
No, he's a rock. A drinking rock.
He's fine. But he's... I'd actually love to have Seth Smith on the team for a couple more years.
Yeah.
Me too.
He's perfectly fine. He's there.
Absolute great fourth outfielder.
Did you guys see... I think we talked about this last week on the podcast. I think I talked to David about it. There was a play last week where right after Martin got back, or maybe the first week or something, Smith was playing right field, and somebody hit a ball into the right center field gap, and the camera like panned in on Smith because he was the most obvious guy to make the play, and you saw him just go full like dad sprinting to pull a kid out of traffic, like his legs way up in the air, he's huffing and chuffing, and he's just booking it to this ball, and then just like he gets maybe 15 feet from the ball, and then just out of the left side of the frame, there's Leonis Martin casually gliding over, and he just kind of stands there and catches the ball.
Like, what were you doing?
He's like, oh, right, you're good at defense, and I'm
the flower of youth,
and I'm an old man. Oh, it was perfect. I love Seth Smith so much. I love that guy.
Me too.
So now that we've gone into the darkest recesses of recent Mariner past.
Yeah, sorry about that. It was just a very good trivia.
That really is.
Should we let the Twitter and question givers bring us back up way up?
Blast way up on high.
Mm-hmm. David, do we have some questions today?
We have some great questions. Once again, thank you everyone for shooting us some questions. We have some really cool ones this week. The first of... is a bit of a curveball for us from Mike Barr, who we've had before, at Seahawk Scout.
Oh, I remember this guy.
Mm-hmm. If you were stuck in a room full of aggressive Angels fans for 10 hours with one Mariner, who is it and why?
Wait, so I'm in a room with Angel fans and a Mariner player? Well, first of all, the idea of an aggressive Angel fan is a misnomer.
They're just Angels
living
fans.
In L.A.
They can't be bothered to be aggressive.
The only thing they'll get angry about is if like they forget to put the rally monkey up there.
Okay, fine. Okay, let me rephrase it. You just got in a 10-car pileup because someone was texting and driving down Mulholland Drive, and everyone's a little antsy. Mm. Who's the Mariner you want backing you up?
Oh, so who do I want as like a...
It's like your safety blanket.
That changes the answer.
I mean, I have one, but Scott, if you have one, we're welcome to it. Because I can paint a picture here. What happens is this Mariner, you know, I like start trying to get into the fight with him, but this Mariner grabs me and he just kind of throws me because like somehow it's like one of those rooms that's getting ready to close, kind of like that scene in Serenity, if you guys saw that, where they're like trying to get away from the bad guys, and he chucks me out right as the thing's going, and then all you hear is just all these horrible sounds, rah, 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 and then just totally blank faced, the door opens and Chris Iannetta, just covered head to toe in blood, just walks out, doesn't say a word, doesn't say a word, just looks at me and says, "Time to go."
You've got one of two dad candidates for that position right there.
Dude, I think Chris Iannetta can throw down.
Oh, yeah.
And he would not change his facial expression whilst doing so. That guy is a stone-cold killer.
I would suggest that the Mariners sign former Brewer reliever Mike Fetters to a one-day contract, and then he backs me
I don't think you have time to do that.
With the power stare.
Get me Fetters on the phone. There's angry fans.
I got a fucking iPhone. I can do whatever I want.
Uber.
You know what
Uber,
year it is?
But for angry baseball players.
Uber, but for Mike Fetters.
Do that side snap stare.
I think for me, it's Nelly. Just pure power.
But he's too nice.
Yeah,
he's not with a couple Angels fans.
Dude, did you see that Autoglass commercial? I don't know, man. Him and Cars, I think he'd be trying to make a deal instead of backing you up. He'd be like, "This is a good." He'd be passing out business cards.
Like you're like punching a couple guys, and you look over there, and Nelly's on the other side of the room, like signing an autograph for one of the dudes. He just
honestly
so happy.
Honestly, I think I would take Felix.
Ooh,
because intensity.
Yeah, and he's
you
all
want someone who goes really crazy in that scenario.
Yeah, I think Felix would go really crazy, but I also think he would severely injure it and tear whatever's left of that.
Oh, his elbow's gone when that's over.
I think that Seager could throw down, and I think he'd fight dirty. He's a biter.
No way.
He's down at the bottom, like nut punching everybody and just like crapping.
No, he's not nut punching. guns and everyone. He's like flicking them. It's like, wow, this is incredibly ineffective.
Robinson Cano just, let's be real. You don't want Cano. No. He just sits back, laughs, and then they never bother him.
He's the guy that like, he's got the guys that he sends into the fight for him.
Yeah.
Oh, what the hell? Oh, God, this is so, it's Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley Jesus. Will, yeah. Like, this wasn't even a contest. Sean O'Malley is who I want.
I didn't realize this was a grit question.
He is the dude.
You're talking about the guy who's going to lose it. Who's going to snap?
He's the Irish dude from Braveheart.
It's awesome. I need it.
Yep, that's exactly who it would be. Okay, that's a good answer. So I think we got the Iannetta. That sounds Italian, but he looks Irish to me. So I think we're setting
anyone on the current 25 man who is capable of being in the film Gangs of New York,
which is not current Wade Miley.
No,
pre-shave Wade Miley. Actually,
That's a Scorsese movie that's actually somehow underrated.
Miley would not be a bad pick because you know that guy has like knives hidden all over.
Yeah. in his cleats.
He's just ready to go.
That guy's got some sort of buck hunter rifle just in his stirrups.
Probably had one in his beard.
He had everything in there.
Yeah, All right, what else do we have, David? Next question. Next.
What's Kyle Rancourt got for us this week?
Kyle Rancourt didn't come in this week on us.
Wow,
Kyle. I see your.
So we got one from, and we can just. I think we just each do one name for this. Okay.
Okay.
One name for coming and one name going. Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Fave trade candidates, incoming and outgoing. The question comes from CBoss15 at CBoss15.
Ooh. My favorite CBoss.
Okay.
So let's all give one fave trade candidate, incoming and outgoing.
David, do you want to go first? Do you have him in mind?
I do. I think mine's a little unrealistic, and it's Cole Calhoun. I don't think he's up for sale.
I mean,
here's
the hard part of this question I'm having. When you say your favorite one to give up, I mean, you don't want to give up anyone.
No, I don't want to give, but most likely, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think my most outgoing would be Mike Montgomery.
Interesting.
They're not necessarily those two that are related.
And that's not the trade.
Why would you deal Mike Montgomery, who has so much control?
Well, I think the idea would be that
the idea is you're going to have to give something up.
Have to.
Player.
And they have such a rich and vibrant minor league system, obviously.
Well, no. And this isn't me saying I think to get Cole Calhoun, we have to give Mike Montgomery.
No, I understand.
Yeah. I'm saying my favorite target for us is Cole Calhoun and the most likely player to go in any trade scenario where we're acquiring a player type like that is Mike Montgomery.
As part of a package, because you'd have to do more.
Yeah.
Scott, do you have anything? I'm struggling with
this. I do. Chris Iannetta has been better than expected, but I still look at Jonathan Lucroy as a guy that I would just absolutely kill to have on this team.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, Zunino, maybe there's a future there, but for me, I've kind of written it off. I don't think that there's any future there.
Wow.
I believe Lucroy has, one more year of control? I think he has a team option after this year, so you'd have him for next year as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go super crazy, you could go Ryan Braun, but I think that is playing with fire, and I think it's probably a bad idea.
Agreed.
You want to? I'll go real strange on this one.
Love it.
I'm going to say Melvin Upton as a very interesting trade candidate.
Son of a bitch.
That is going to be Nathan's, yeah.
I think that's a super, super interesting candidate. Very risky. I think he's owed $15, $16 million next year.
16 and a half.
Yeah. So maybe they kick in some money. Maybe not. I mean, is he really playing less than his money right now? Not really in today's market. That would fill a corner outfield gap. It'd be great defense. It'd be speed. It would make a lot of sense. Right-handed bat to replace the balance in the lineup. Like I
play center when there's a tough righty on the mound.
Absolutely.
Tough lefty, excuse me.
He makes a lot of sense in the current construction of the roster.
And then who are you giving up, Zunino?
I actually think that the most likely guy to go right now and a guy that you can try and sell high on, if that's a thing, is DJ Peterson.
Hmm.
I could see that. Again, not saying that you can just trade him one for one.
No, absolutely not. But as part of a package, I think that he has some sort of enticing value.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, none of these answers are one for ones.
Yeah, of course not. Of course not. But if they're going to go out and get any of the three names that I mentioned, they're going to have to put together some sort of package. And Peterson is a guy who I think has no future in this organization. I have no faith in him ever becoming a big league player. And if there is even a sniff of him having some sort of trade value, now is the time to get rid of him.
I do not disagree.
Yep.
With that at all. I think that for me, I was really going to say BJ Upton, Melvin Upton, excuse me.
Boss man Upton.
The
B-man.
Yes, you know. That was going to be my pick. I'm trying to think of who I might else. I'm kind of eyeballing that Yankees roster, kind of figuring out. Oh,
if Brett Gardner was for sale, I mean, they have a better record than us right now. Or maybe not now.
Slow up.
Well, they're a worse team.
They're very near us in record.
They're not a good team.
But if Brett Gardner was for sale, oh my
gosh. You know, there's a couple guys on there that I'd consider. I don't think necessarily, even though it's the obvious answer, that you have to get a corner outfielder. I think you're just looking for an upgrade. You just want to get your team better. It doesn't really matter where you want to get it. And, you know, if they're willing to kick in some money there, and I don't know if they would, but I've heard a little bit of rumbling. It's probably an extreme long shot that would never happen. I'd take a look at CC Sabathia. He has one more year left on his deal for a lot of money, so you're going to want the Yankees to pay some of that. You're not going to give up a lot of talent there to acquire that. He brings another left-handed starting pitcher in there.
You do love CC.
I do.
That's very interesting.
The deal is not as long as I thought. It being up after next year is what entices me on that one. And again, it's not plan A. You took my plan A. So I'm just trying to think of other things we can do. I don't think they have the guys to get someone Andrew Miller.
What do you give up to get CC Sabathia at this stage of his career?
Yeah. Strange, like, that is strange target. Salary
relief for the Yankees, right? Because they're just trying to get ready to sign Bryce Harper.
God.
And Giancarlo Stanton.
They're just getting ready to extend Dustin Ackley is what they're
doing. Oh, yeah. Like, he's almost healthy. He's almost healthy.
That's so interesting.
I don't...
Yeah, and isn't that Sabathia option is actually, it's a vesting option. So if he gets hurt, you don't have to pay that.
And he's been much better this year. He's, you know, it's just you're looking for something that you can find. It's an
idea. Yeah,
it's an
idea. I mean, obviously there's risk there, and you don't want to talk too much about it. But yeah, he's been through some personal issues that are known to...
known quantity
easily, and that's, you know,
there's definitely red flags and risks there. So,
and he's, you know, the K to walk ratio does not great.
Nope.
But hey, results based analysis, let's do it. He's an ace.
Hell yeah.
All right.
He's been good almost my entire lifetime. So guys, I would give up, by the way. I would not say again that I would trade
this. By the way, he has been good for Skiba's entire lifetime.
That is
true. Yes. I mean, when you've only been alive 5 years.
I wouldn't say that I would give this guy up for CC Sabathia because that would be a ridiculously stupid trade. But if they wanted to go bigger and get something with more impact, and if because I think that the team is firmly understanding. I think that this 2016 team is probably the best Mariner team for a couple years until the farm system can or cannot start to bear fruit for this organization.
Tough free agent market's coming up.
So I think that they've got to strike while the iron is hot. So if they wanted to get an impact guy in the corner outfield, I think that you could look at trading somebody like Nate Karns if the rotation stabilizes with him in the bullpen. And again, that's a big thing because that guy has so much club control. He's not free agent eligible till 2021, I think.
Wow.
So that you're giving up a piece there. That's like the Doug Fister trade all over again is what that's like.
You're kind of getting the gears turning here. Is Iwakuma a guy you consider trading?
Potentially.
Mm-hmm. If he can kind of...
trade him to the Dodgers.
That is a tough one. He's got a very interesting contract. That protects him against injury. The velocity is down again.
Yep.
History would suggest, in non-James Paxton terms, that velocity goes down as you get older.
Yep.
But if we're trading Kuma, we're giving up this season.
No.
Not necessarily. I don't agree with that.
Because then you slot Karns back in that spot. The unknown is what is Felix
look like. It's not like Kuma's been great.
What does Felix look like when he comes back? Because if he comes back...
See, I guess the biggest part about that trade that doesn't make sense is that you've got to find two buyers for that trade.
Yep.
You've got to find a team with an absolute black hole in their rotation who has a corner outfielder to spare.
Dodgers.
That's the... Yeah. Oh, you want to do Andre Ethier? No.
No. You want to do Yasiel Puig?
Oh, I was going to say, what? Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, let's, we could do a whole episode.
Yeah, that's a whole show.
Next question.
Let's do one more.
Kyle Rancourt, what do you got? Next question.
Let's do one more and wrap it up. Guys.
Oh, one more. Okay, well, then I got to pick.
Ooh, you got to get selected. Nathan, you're going to piss off some readers, man.
Yeah, we got a lot today.
Sorry, guys. Game's on. I got family visiting from out of town. They're already pissed off.
Okay, I'll give you one that I actually received as a direct message because I really like this question.
Ooh.
Slide into our DMs.
Wasn't courageous enough to go public with it.
So this is from Griffin Withington, who you can get at Griffin the Lefty.
Okay.
Griffin asks us, and this kind of actually ties into what we were just discussing. If the playoffs started today and the Mariners were a wild card team and all your starters are fully healthy, what should be the Mariners' four-man playoff rotation? Or should they even use a four-man rotation?
Well, they got to play the wild card game. Let's slow your roll.
Let's assume, okay, we're in a five-game divisional series.
Okay.
So they win the right.
They're in. They're dancing.
But does that mean that they burn a pitcher in the?
I mean, they have to, right?
What is it? Yeah, it's a two-game give. You get them back at the end, so they're the tail of the four man.
Jesus Christ, Wade Miley.
Yeah, getting rocked.
Okay, for the sake of argument, let's say that Felix is burned, because I don't know if it's something we can all agree with, but I would say that in a one-game playoff scenario, there's no way I'm sending anybody to the mound but Felix.
It's Felix. Yep. It is.
So I'm taking James Paxton first. I'm taking Taiwan Walker 2.
Whoa.
I'm taking Iwakuma 3. And then 4 is whoever is healthiest and performing the best out of Wade Miley.
Well, 4 could be Felix again.
That is true. That is true. The MLB playoffs like to have about 6 days in between games.
Every game.
So really, it's probably back to Felix. Yeah, you're right. I was going to go Wade LeBlanc, but, you know.
How amazing would that be if Wade LeBlanc pitched a playoff game for the 2016 Mariners?
It could absolutely happen. And how funny is it that we're talking about that in a year where we were like, oh, my God, we have so much rotation depth.
It's all been, you can never have enough pitching. I mean, if there's a more true cliche than that, I don't know.
Yep.
Because it's just so, eaten up. I don't disagree with any of that. I think you guys are
spot on. Agree with Scott, but I would absolutely swap Kuma and Ty.
You'd put Kuma in the rotation there?
Yeah, I go Paxton, Kuma, Ty.
Okay, why is that? I'm interested in this. Is it because it's an innings thing? Like Ty's, if we're in that scenario, Ty's going to be at like 180 to 200 in the playoffs, right?
Actually,
he's missed some time, so probably like about 180.
For me, it's actually changing the styles of the arms, because Kuma is such a different thrower than Paxton, and I think of Ty as sort of, I mean Paxton's probably our best pitcher right now, which is insane to say, but Ty is sort of the right-handed version of Paxton. So I like
it's
to change.
It's still
up
lefty
flips.
Righty though.
It's true. But you're getting lefty righty with totally different styles between Kuma and Paxton. I love the big switch.
I think the thing that you're I don't know. I struggle with
it's
Ty.
Righty heavy. Though.
I struggle with
technically
Ty.
You'd go lefty righty righty righty.
Ty has such a high, like, he could go out there. If you told me he went out there and struck out 12 over 7 and gave up 2 hits and shut him out in that playoff game, I totally believe it. And if you tell me he got pulled with 2 runners on with an out in the 3rd inning after giving up 5 runs, I'd also be totally fine there. He has such a ridiculously wide variance of potential outcomes, where with obviously those variables still exist with Kuma, but the outliers feel less likely.
Right. Kuma's going to give somewhere between 2 to 4 runs up.
And 5 to 7 innings, like
strikeout
4 to 6 probably. So, you know, I guess it kind of depends on how rested is the bullpen. Like, I don't know. I love Taiwan, but his consistency is really terrifying. Would you guys like to hear a story?
Yes.
So this is a story all about how the Rangers gave up 6 runs in the bottom of the 9th inning and lost to the Yankees 9-7.
Oh, that's...
It's a shame.
That's a great story that is sadly inconsequential.
It's true. Except for the fact that I enjoy their misery and sadness.
Sure.
So, yeah, it doesn't matter, but I like that they lost. That's all.
Wow. Who got – so that wasn't a closing situation.
It was a Matt Bush
situation. It was a Matt Bush situation. So – okay, well, let's wrap this one up with Scott. You already said you're fine with them just going 5-7, 6-6 into.
I'm not fine with it, but I don't.
Well,
think
let's go between now and the next recording, like we usually do.
Okay, so they've got no days off. They've got this game that they're currently losing 3-0, and then they'll have a earlier game against the. They'll have a getaway game next Wednesday against the Stros, so they should have 8 more games in there.
Wow.
Yeah, I want to go.
Are you assuming that we're going to record next week? Because
yeah, we've been hit.
Track record suggests we got a 50-50 on that.
Whatever, I recorded last week. Where were you guys? Oh, David, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't gone.
No, I was gone. I want them to go 4-4. It's boring, but that's what it is. They have the Orioles are tough. The Astros are on fire. So, you know, I just want to, and even more than the win and loss, I just want to see them start getting healthy. I just want them to start looking like the team that they looked like in May, where the guys are doing the things that you're depending on them doing. So you guys feel any differently than that?
I like us a little better than that because I actually think we pair up pretty well to the Orioles. I think I like 5-3.
That'd be great. That'd get them at
3 games over.
Mm-hmm. That'd be good. Into their final stretch before the break.
Into the, yeah, again, going into Kansas City.
Yeah, and if you, I mean, I would really love to see them win that. See, I'd go, if you give me 3-5, but say we sweep the Astros, I'm taking that all day. They need to show well on that series
and
not get pummeled because that team's playing really well. Scott, do you have any final thoughts on that or anything else before we depart?
No, I think what I said before kind of covers it. I mean, I'm okay with 500. You obviously want more, but you know, at this stage in the season, I think expectations have changed. So you just want to be in the mix. It's kind of funny because we act like it's not that big a deal if they go 4-4, it's whatever, but it's going to be like super critical if they only go 500 through an 8-game stretch when it's in September, when baseball's linear. So really it's just as important now as it is then. I guess at this stage before the trade deadline, when they have that flexibility and a future unknown, it feels less important, even though it actually isn't. So I would be okay with 4-4, but shame on me for saying that. And I would hope that it's 5-3.
I agree.
Cool.
Win more games than you lose, you numb nuts.
Get them.
Killing me. All right. Well, thanks so much, David and Scott. Again, thank you guys for listening to us. Thank you so much for your questions and for hanging out with us through this atrocious month of June. Hopefully, after tomorrow's game, we can flip the calendar. And we know it doesn't actually mean anything, but that's our fun demarcation. Because you see, many thousands of years ago, was it the Romans that invented the calendar?
I don't know. That was the Mayans.
Arguably.
No, the Mayans were the ones that invented the bad one that was going to kill us all. This one's just cool for telling us when
but
we
it
can
was,
turn the page.
Was it not
season.
A calendar? It was a calendar.
It was. It's true. Oh, I meant our modern 12-month calendar. I think that it was the Greeks.
Mm.
Anyway.
Ooh. I'll ask them when I'm there.
All right. Sounds good. Oh, big spender. All right. We'll see you guys.
Really.
We will
Thanks,
see
Brexit.
You guys next week. Thanks so much for joining us.
Gonna build that city on a hill.